You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, whatever you like. Or you can always go to your smart device and say, play podcast Locked On Vikings, and it'll take you right to the most recent episode. And before we get into the meat of the episode, we're going to go over a couple of prospects that I wanted to highlight. We have a little bit of news to talk about. It's not really news, but it's something that you probably saw, and I figured I should speak on it. There was a rumor that came out of Cleveland Radio early on Wednesday morning that said that the Browns and Vikings were talking about a possible trade for Odell Beckham for the cost of a second and fifth round pick. So that would have been a pretty interesting thing to talk about. Later in the afternoon, pretty much any beat reporter with any credibility, Darren Wolfson, Ben Gessling, Mary Kay Cabot over on the Cleveland side, etc., pretty much everybody, Paul Allen, they all kind of texted their people saying, hey, is there anything to this? And they basically all said it was BS. So you can kind of put that down right away. To me, it didn't sound like that that radio person, I forget the name of him, but he is a host for Cleveland's version of KFAN. I think it's WFAN. And it sounded like he was, you know, trying to say something legit. Like, he didn't seem like he was just, like, randomly clickbaiting, but it turned out to not really be anything. And so what I think might be the case, this is my theory, is that they probably talked about it, and teams talk about stuff all the time, right? They're saying, hey, you know, what about a Harris trade? Well, what about a Beckham trade? No, okay. And, like, the conversation never goes any further than that, but then some guy texts his source, yeah, we chatted about it for a sec, but it never went anywhere. And then somebody goes on their radio show and said, you know, there were talks, and suddenly that sounds a lot crazier than it actually was. And so when all the credible beat reporters start poking, everybody's going like, no, there's nothing like that going on, because it never actually manifested itself into anything, you know, tangible. But the one person who, you know, couldn't distinguish between, like, what is actually something with legs and something that, you know, can probably be easily ignored, makes the mistake of tweeting it out, and then everybody goes on fire. So it was kind of a fun morning, but otherwise not much going on that front. To me, I think it's pretty likely that the next thing we see, the next move the Vikings make, is going to be on draft day or after the draft. They still definitely have roster building to do. They have about $12.5 million in cap space. They are going to do something with Anthony Harris. I think it's pretty unlikely at this juncture. All options are on the table, but I think it's unlikely that Harris actually plays out the season on the franchise tag. It seems like neither side really wants that. They either want to trade him or extend him, and both the Vikings and Harris's camp, like, would prefer those two options. So something is still going to happen. Whether it's before or after the draft, we kind of just have to wait and see. COVID made everything really weird, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But it's not an Odell Beckham trade, as fun as that would have been to break down. Unfortunately, that's not what's going on right now. Here's to hoping I'm coming in on Monday and eating crow, because that'd be really fun. So for the rest of the show today, I owe you guys. I've wronged you. I've been a bad podcast host, so I have something to make up to you. On Tuesday, I didn't do Prospect of the Day, and on Wednesday, I also didn't do Prospect of the Day. There was some news, some tonal things I didn't want to do, so I owe you guys three prospects for this show, because I need to do today's Prospect of the Day as well. So that's what we're going to do for the rest of the show. We're just going to do three prospects in depth, like on Prospect of the Day, and kind of get caught up. And I also want to tell you about how the draft is going to work, because it's going to be weird. I'll tell you about that at the end of the show, so do stick around so that you know what to expect for draft week, which is next week. And I want to start with somebody I'm actually pretty excited about, Clemson cornerback A.J. Terrell. This is somebody I could absolutely see the Vikings taking. For one, they've taken some Clemson cornerbacks in the past, right, with Alexander and Curse. You know, they like the program, of course. But A.J. Terrell has been a really good player there in Clemson. And the way that he plays, I think, is pretty Zimmery. Not perfectly Zimmery, but it's pretty Zimmery. And I don't know if it, like, fits the principles of Mike Zimmer so much as it fits, like, what Mike Zimmer typically asks of his corners, but I do think that he would, in particular, thrive in Minnesota in a way that he may not thrive elsewhere. And that's because really what I like about him is that he's a quick thinker, and he kind of checks that box that I've been talking about with other cornerbacks, where he can, I think Jalen Johnson, I talked about it with him earlier in the week, he can really read what's going on and crash down on the ball and be like anticipatory instead of just like a reactionary mirror match win with physicality guy. And I feel like Mike Zimmer really prefers, you know, quick studies, quick learners, guys that can figure out a game plan, guys that can watch four games of tape and know exactly what a quarterback's thinking. That's really valuable to him because it means that he doesn't have to build in as many provisions into his defense, like different alignment checks and stuff, and a lot of the complexities that like Trey Waynes talked about when he was on the show a couple weeks ago. So if you can like get rid of some of those complexities, it makes it a lot easier for young corners to kind of assimilate into the system. And so what I really like about AJ Terrell is that he has this trait that makes it a little bit like it mitigates the whole, you know, rookies take 2 years to develop in Mike Zimmer's system. And we've seen that with a lot of people, right? Mackenzie Alexander took a while, although that's kind of because he didn't buy in. Trey Waynes took a while to figure it out. Even Xavier Rhodes took a little bit, although I mean, his rookie year was the Frazier year in 2013. And then he had to kind of figure it out in 2014. But we saw Mike Hughes, who in his first couple of years, he was hurt some, but he also like needed some time to figure it out. It takes time for guys to learn Zimmer's system because there's so many complexities and nuances. And if you have somebody like AJ Terrell who can play and be in the right spot without the help of all of the flow chart, you know, if this motion happens, then I do this alignment. And then if this route concept happens, I have to get to this landmark and all that stuff. And if you don't need that big complex matrix of decisions being made for you beforehand, and you can just process the play yourself, then, you know, you can kind of shortcut your way into understanding what's going on in the system. And I think AJ Terrell is capable of that. And I think that's maybe the most exciting thing about him. And there's a lot more about AJ Terrell. I'm going to step away for a second. When I come back, we'll talk about him and we got two more prospects. So do stick around. Okay, so back to AJ Terrell from Clemson. So he has, in addition to like the mental processing and the ability to really read and react, he has really, really nice footwork and really nice technique. He has good reactionary speed. You know, when he figures out what's going on and he realizes the spot he has to get to go make a play on the ball, he can really burst there. And his combine went pretty well for that. The thing about AJ Terrell that I think makes him un-Zimmery, everything here is very good in like Zimmery, is that he doesn't have the physicality that you usually see like Mike Zimmer stereotype for. You know, he likes these big, long, like press corners, like Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes were guys that were like physically, you know, they could like hit you. And, you know, Trey Waynes was always so, so stout in run support, and AJ Terrell doesn't really have that gene. It is similarly to CJ Henderson, who I kind of talked about this with him, but I guess I would probably say that CJ Henderson's problem with this was worse, and like Greedy Williams' problem with this was worse. It's more that he's a wiry cornerback. He has a really, really like thin frame, and he doesn't really have like that physicality. And part of what you need to do, and this is going to come up later, so this is important. Part of what you need to do when you're a cornerback and covering a route, sometimes you don't need to like mirror and match and stay behind him and be in the right perfect spot and go make a play on the ball and all that stuff. Sometimes you just knock him off the route, you've ruined the play. Think about like an RPO with a really quick slant on it. If you can out-muscle the guy, and you know, you can get all the contact you want within 5 yards, right? And if you can just out-muscle the guy and push him off the route, those slants are like very much a timing route. And if the wide receiver isn't able to finish his route by the time the quarterback hits his drop, especially on stuff like an RPO or plays that are designed to, say, neutralize an elite pass rusher by leaving them unblocked and throwing over their heads, stuff like that, that happens to like Khalil Mack all the time. And if you can, as a cornerback, teams do that to Danielle Hunter. So if you can, as a cornerback, knock him off of that spot, knock him off of that timing, then the QB can't actually, you know, throw the slant that he wants to throw because it hasn't, like, developed the way it was supposed to yet. And if you make it just, you can let the slant happen and just make it slower than it was supposed to be, then you can disrupt the play, possibly cause a sack, all kinds of stuff like that. Maybe the most famous example of this is the Super Bowl, I want to say it was 49. The Seahawks-Patriots one that ended on the Malcolm Butler interception. I believe it was Jermaine Kearse who got knocked off of his route really, really hard, and that physicality screwed up the timing of the play and allowed Malcolm Butler to make like this incredible play, right? That's the kind of thing that you get with these big physical corners, and AJ Terrell doesn't have that. And he's great at coverage, good at being sticky, really good zone instincts, and all this really great stuff, but you have to teach him to be a better physical player. And a lot of that is also like tackling technique is very, very sloppy tackling technique. A lot of times he's looking at Google, make a big play, make a big hit. And it's not necessarily, you know, being the hard-nosed, grindy, just get the guy down kind of player that you would like to see in a corner. And so a lot of people have this kind of thing, making AJ Terrell fall to the second round. And if you listen to the Locked On NFL mock draft special, which came out on Wednesday, was the picks 21 to 26, I think it was. So our 25th pick was in there. So go listen to that. It's at the Locked On NFL podcast. They were kind of evaluating where we were when we came at 25. There was like every corner you could ever want was on the board except for CJ Henderson and Jeffrey Okuda. All the rest of the corners were available. So they were kind of debating who I should take before I actually sent the picking. And they were kind of talking about how like there's this glut of five corners, and AJ Terrell is one, and Christian Fulton is one, and Jeff Gladney is one, and you know, Jalen Johnson and all these guys. And I think that AJ Terrell is probably belongs in that conversation. If he went in the first round, I wouldn't be shocked, but a lot of people move him down to the second round because, you know, teams aren't going to want like a wiry corner who can't tackle, even if he's good in coverage. Now, I think that's a more fixable problem, right? Guys can put on weight. Guys can definitely learn how to tackle, especially if you put them on special teams. They get, you know, the Vikings are excellent at teaching players how to tackle. They have had a very good tackling team for a long time. Even guys like Eric Kendricks, who had a problem with that, are now seen as like better tacklers. Like people absolutely improve in this system under Zimmer. And so I think that it's a really great fit, and I love the Vikings as an environment for AJ Terrell. If I were a neutral observer, a neutral draft scout, just saying where's the best place for AJ Terrell to land, Minnesota would definitely be on my list. So I'm a big fan of picking him. I think it'd probably be a reach to pick him at like 22 or 25, but he'd be somebody if, you know, if you traded back to 33 or 34, you know, get him there. And or if he falls to 58, I'm sprinting to the podium. So now I want to move on to the next guy on my list, which is somebody I've been meaning to talk about, and that's Jabari Zuniga, an edge rusher out of Florida. So he's somebody that JR actually brought up on the podcast when he came on and mentioned how he's a very like Zimmery guy, or, you know, very much like a fit for the patterns of the Vikings drafting in the Zimmer era. I'll say it that way because I don't know if this is a Zimmer thing or an Andre Patterson thing with defensive line. But essentially, the Vikings are kind of known for taking third round, fourth round, like raw edge rushers, guys that are super athletic, but, you know, are projects. I think like Fadi Odenigbo, really, really strong, but needed to learn a lot of things. Of course, Danielle Hunter, very famously this. Scott Crichton was kind of the first swing at trying to land a Danielle Hunter. I think Jalen Holmes kind of fit a similar bill, although they moved him to defensive tackle, made him gain a bunch of weight, and that was, I think, a different kind of pick. I don't know if that one actually counts for like, let's go get a big, you know, spark score jock and try to teach him how to play. And but Jabari Zuniga would definitely be this kind of player, and it's very, very extreme. So he was like a combine superstar, and that athleticism shows up on tape as well, which is an important thing to like pay attention to. The problem is he has kind of no idea what he's doing, and like it's pretty bad. Like, it's the kind of thing where if he doesn't develop quickly, he could like be in danger of being like one of those fourth round picks that doesn't make the team kind of guys. I don't think the Vikings would ever do that, but he would be, you know, one of those guys where you draft him in the third or fourth round and then he's not active on any game days and you're going, God, where'd Jalen Holmes go? And be like kind of the same thing. So he has all the physical tools and all the athleticism in the world, but he kind of died to every NFL quality offensive lineman he went up against, and that's a big problem. And so why all that stuff happened kind of speaks to a couple of lessons that I think we can learn from these like raw project prospects. And I think it's interesting because, you know, once you get past the third and fourth round, I think you can only get so good of an athlete without them coming with, you know, severe red flags once you get past this. And I think Jabari Zuniga kind of represents that line of this is the last moment. This is as bad as you can be as a football player. And when you have like athleticism like his, then you're only going to fall about as far as Jabari Zuniga falls. Like, it's kind of a litmus test of how far a guy can fall when they have elite athleticism. And I'll speak to the, like, more specific issues with him a little later, but he does have a really explosive first step. I know that that's a big Zimmer thing, you know, that he wants somebody to kind of put a lot of pressure on offensive linemen to quote-unquote build their house very quickly. That's something that O-linemen need to do, where they kind of have to get down, get their feet square, kind of get in there, I'm ready to apply leverage to you posture. And that's, like, a difficult thing to do very quickly. You have to, especially when you're huge like an offensive lineman, you have to get your feet in certain spots, get a certain posture. And if you have a really quick, explosive first step like Zuniga does, like Everson Griffin does, like Sheldon Richardson, or even go back to like Sharif Floyd was elite at this, then you require the offensive lineman to do that very quickly. And a lot of linemen can't do that very quickly, and you can generate pressures that way. So what are all these problems with Jabari Zuniga? Well, stick around and I will tell you in just a second. Okay, so let's talk about Jabari Zuniga and, like, defensive line technique. So when I talk about the first step, the problem with him is he's very explosive. He has all the athleticism you could ever want to have a good first step. The problem is that his technique on that first step is really, really inconsistent. And sometimes he can, despite the athleticism and despite the quickness that he can apply in kind of launching out of his stance, because he doesn't have the right footwork and the right technique, sometimes he's actually the last guy out of the blocks on the defensive line, which has the opposite effect of what I just described. The other thing that gets Zuniga in trouble is that he is really, really poor at hand fighting. And that's a really important thing. If you want to think about the leverage battle between an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman, basically whoever gets the inside hand wins. And usually I tell people, like, try this with a friend. Of course, you can't do that with social distancing unless you're, like, staying with a roommate or something. But try just pushing on a wall and see how much power you can generate pushing on a wall with your hands together. And then spread your hands a little further apart and see how much pressure you can get pushing on that. To put it another way, you know, if somebody's hands are inside and on your chest, it's really difficult to get a good grip on them because you kind of have to bend your elbows around their arms to get your hands to their shoulders, and then, you know, you can't get as much of a push. So getting that inside hand is really, really important. And so you'll see if you, like, frame by frame through an offensive-defensive line battle, especially one between, like, two really, really tenacious people, like, you know, Tyron Smith and Khalil Mack or something like that, and if you kind of, like, frame by frame through those kinds of battles, then you can actually really see them all trying to swipe each other's hands out of the way and trying to get each other's arms off of each other and all that stuff. And it's a very dynamic facet of pass rush and pass protection that doesn't get a lot of talk. And Jabari Zuniga is really, really bad at this, which means he can get long-armed by tackles. If tackles get their hands on him, he has a very difficult time, like, shedding that. And so you get he needs hand counters, and he doesn't need to improve his hand counters. He needs to create hand counters, and you kind of need to build that from the ground up. So there's a lot of project to go on with Jabari Zuniga, but if you unlock it, then you get a Danielle Hunter. That's really what the Vikings do, you know, and if they draft five third round defensive ends and one of them turns into Danielle Hunter, I think that that's worth it. And so I kind of support that they're just going to take this swing every single time. So I would definitely support a draft pick of Jabari Zuniga, despite all those flaws, despite all the things that he's not particularly good at. He still has speed to power. That's one of Andre Patterson's favorite moves. It's one where you'll rush really quickly upfield to try to get a tackle, to stress a tackle's footwork, basically make them move their big 335-pound body upfield really, really fast and hope that that breaks down their footwork. And then when they're vulnerable, you cut on a dime directly into them and turn it into a bull rush. You convert speed upfield into power, and then hopefully you can take advantage of the bad set that you've created by being so fast. He does know that move. It's just a matter of, like, pass rush counters and having more of a plan. That's something that Andre Patterson and a lot of defensive line coaches will teach. Charles McDonald, who does a lot of defensive line stuff, used to go for the Bleacher Report, like, Top 100 project. Now I believe he covers the New York teams. But he also is, like, a defensive line expert, and he kind of says, you know, pass rush with a plan. You have to have a plan when you go in, and he doesn't, like, have a plan beyond plan A, where, you know, okay, if they counter this, I'll do that, you know? Like, Everson Griffin is great at this. He'll say, all right, I'm going to go upfield, and if they meet me up there, then I'll be able to hit them with a spin move. And Jabari Zuniga just kind of says, I'm going to bull rush this time, and, like, if that works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't, and that's kind of, like, all he has. So you kind of have to teach him a lot more nuances, and you have to do a lot of work to him. I am totally fine with the upside, though. If you want to do that in the third or fourth round, take a swing there, and if it doesn't work out, losing a fourth rounder, I'm like totally fine putting those chips on the table. So let's move on to the last guy I want to talk about, and it's somebody I actually don't like, and it's a late round pick, and I don't just dislike him because I'm saying, oh, I don't like him as much. He's only like a sixth round grade for me. This is somebody I see drafted a lot, and I actually see mocked to the Vikings a good bit, and I don't think he's draftable. It's Benjamin Victor. He is an Ohio State player. He's got all the size and length you want. He doesn't have any medical red flags. And I want to say it was Joe Banner, former president of the Eagles, who said, you know, if you are in the late rounds and you see somebody who's from a big school with adequate athleticism and no medical red flags or off-field red flags, then there's only one other reason that that person is here, and it's that they suck at this. And I kind of feel like that applies to Benjamin Victor. His size is fine. He ran like a 4.6 40, so he's not like really that fast, but that's not why he's dropping. He went to Ohio State and was decently productive there as a rotational option, and he doesn't have any major medical red flags, at least not that I know of. So there's kind of only one other reason he can be down there. But let me get more into it. So he is, I think, like a bigger, you know, physical type of receiver. But the problem is he kind of has a slight frame. And so he's exposed to the same issue we talked about with AJ Terrell. Remember that thing I told you to remember? The thing about getting knocked off your routes and the timing being disrupted? He's really susceptible to that, despite being a big receiver. So he runs fine routes, he can catch the ball, and he has fine, you know, fluidity and flexibility and stuff. And so he does have plenty going for him. Maybe that does make him draftable, but I do not foresee him working out in this league, and I don't even know if he makes a team right now. And the big problem with this is that I don't see a lot of upside with Benjamin Victor. You could go through all the work of trying to teach him how to release better against press and how to use his body better and go through all that, and maybe you could end up with a more complete receiver. But he ran a 4.6 and he's 23. So his frame's not going to fill out, I don't think, in the same way. You know, if you were drafting a 20-year-old that's a little slight and needs to fill out, maybe you have a better chance at that. But at 23, you kind of have what you have here. So I see a low ceiling and I see an even lower floor, because if he can just get knocked off every route, then you can't put that on the field, because it'll ruin the timing of like full-on route concepts. A lot of route concepts are meant to time out a certain way so that if say you have a wide receiver like Laquon Treadwell or whatever, who's covered the entire time, sometimes that route is just designed to clear out the cornerback, and him covering Laquon Treadwell and following Laquon Treadwell to wherever you put him on the field is actually part of the plan. But if you screw up that timing, then you can screw up the other route, and you can screw up what Adam Thielen was doing. There actually have been some interceptions that Laquon Treadwell caused in this way when he was like a clear out. I think one happened against the Lions. I think Kirk Cousins threw one against the Lions, or maybe it was Teddy Bridgewater threw one against the Lions, because Laquon Treadwell was too slow on a go route, and he was supposed to run like a clear out go route. So go deep and make a safety run away with you so that we can, you know, do the route concept underneath without the safety lurking. And what ended up happening was that Darius Slay, who had him in man coverage on that time, had Treadwell in man coverage, knew that he didn't have to turn on all of his jets to keep up with Laquon Treadwell, because he has like 0.3 of a second on his 40, Darius Slay does, on Treadwell, and he was able to turn around and make an interception and kind of keep his eyes on the quarterback and essentially have the awareness that you get with zone coverage while sticking with his man just fine, because Treadwell wasn't talented, and actually got an interception off of that. And I kind of see Benjamin Victor being susceptible to the same thing. Now, most of the time he's drafted in like the sixth or seventh round, so me calling him undraftable isn't that much of a stretch. I'm not really going against much of a grain here. But I see a wide receiver who concerns me, because I just don't think that putting in the work to make him a complete receiver gives you the output that you would want. If I want to put in, you know, a bunch of work to teach somebody how to do the basics of something like release against press, I want it to be a guy like Brandon Ayuk, who comes out as a superstar if I'm successful. You know, if I'm going to put in a bunch of work, give me a Jabari Zuniga, right? If I want somebody in the late rounds who is low ceiling, then they better be somebody who can contribute and be part of the rotation right away. Somebody who comes out of the box ready to play, but just is like too short or too slow or whatever. With somebody like Benjamin Victor, I just don't see how he contributes to the Vikings now, and I definitely don't see him contributing in the future. And so he's somebody that, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him fall out of the draft, and I certainly wouldn't want to spend one of my picks on him, even though the Vikings tend to have a gluttonous haul of seventh round picks. So there's three prospects of the day, AJ Terrell, Jabari Zuniga, and Benjamin Victor. I would definitely draft two of them. I wouldn't draft Victor. So that's going to do it for this week of Locked On Vikings. Before I go, I just want to let you guys know how next week is going to work. So of course, usually I upload a podcast on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning. Well, that's kind of awkward for draft weekend, right? Because the draft is Thursday night, and I would then not do another podcast until Monday after the whole thing is over. And that doesn't work, right? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So what I'm going to do is I'm still going to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday like normal. But Friday, you're going to have a podcast Friday morning talking about what happened in the first round. And then after day two, there will be a podcast coming out Saturday morning. After day three, there will be a podcast coming out Sunday morning. And then after undrafted free agency or whatever kind of happens, or a draft recap, usually Monday morning, I would do a podcast recapping just the undrafted free agents. I don't know if that's going to happen because of COVID-19. So I'll kind of cover whatever happens and then like recap the draft as a whole. And then that's 8 straight days of podcasting. So I'm going to take the rest of that week off. And so what you're getting is a normal 4 podcasts next week. And then the podcasts for the week after that, what would be the week after draft weekend, you're basically just getting them shifted up a few days so that they can be more reactive to what's going on in the actual draft. So that's what I'm planning to do. Obviously, everything is subject to change with COVID, and if something weird could happen with the draft or whatever, we'll kind of play that by ear. But that's what happened last year, and people seem to like it. So basically, I'm going to be with you every morning of draft weekend, recapping what happened the night before, and then we'll kind of wrap it up on Monday morning with one final draft podcast, and then I will rest my poor low vocal cords. So I am very excited for that. Definitely one of my favorite times of year, and we're getting there. We only got 1 week left. Only 4 more shows until an actual draft selection is made. So I will see you all next week for the big draft week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. The show is on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, or whatever you like. Or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all next week. And as always, Skol.